We are in Perek Yud-Tet, which you can find on page 860. Okay. So, this is going to be a review of the last few weeks, and Eliyahu should be like on a high after what he did at Har HaKarmel. So successfully got God's... Yes. That's just the Tanakh. You can get any Tanakh.
You don't need this?
Yes, you need this. Okay.
No, this is actually in the back here.
Okay. There are 30, and I don't see 30 people here, so just...
Not that, the other one that says Obadiah.
That's it.
Same.
Goodness. Okay. Yet, wicked Queen Jezebel was not impressed by what Eliyahu had done. Adarabha, she went after him as a result of his killing her prophets. Right? So... Hashem told Eliyahu, Kedarko Bakodesh, to gain sustenance by eating some food left out for him. And with that strength, he walked 40 days and 40 nights to Har HaElokim Choreva. Right? And with this parallel to Moshe going 40 days and 40 nights without eating, and also at Har HaElokim Choreva, we wondered why, when Chazal tried to compare a Navi to Moshe, because it says in Devarim, I will appoint prophet over Israel just like you. And it could mean any prophet. But Chazal compared Moshe to Shmuel, to Yirmiyahu, and to Ezra. But not to the obvious comparison, which is Eliyahu. At least for this comparison right here. This is the Haftorah of Parshas Kisisa, on the rare occasion where Kisisa is not one of the four Parshios. And this is also, right afterwards, the Haftorah of Parshas Pinchas. This right here is the Haftorah of Parshas Pinchas, on the rare occasion, very rare, where Pinchas is not one of the 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av. So poor Eliyahu, he has two Haftorahs in the year, but we hardly ever read about it, because it's preempted usually by other readings, either again the 4 weeks before Parshios, or the 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av. Now what I'd like to concentrate on is not so much why Eliyahu wasn't chosen as the prophet that is compared to Moshe. We did that last week. He was too critical of his people. This week I'd like to discuss what appears in the Midrashim as Eliyahu's four Talmidim. He had four students. Now one should be obvious is Yonah. That's why Yonah is in this lecture series. We're not getting to him yet, but Yonah is the child, according to Chazal, that Eliyahu revived. Right? Chavakuk is the child that Elisha revived. Okay, so Yonah is one of his students. Obadiahu, I should say, is another student. Who are the other two? Well, Elisha's got to be one of them, right? Elisha's three, and who's four? Yonah, Obadiahu, Elisha, and there's another prophet that's in the middle of these stories, Micha. Oh. Not the Micha you know from Trey Asar, there's a different Micha, right? There's a Micha that makes his way in a story in Malachim. Maybe we'll get up to it today. And I want to compare these four students. Right? We will use these sheets with the word Ovadyahu at the top the next few weeks. We will not get through all of them today. And I want to compare these four students. Yona, Ovadyahu, Micha, and Elisha. Ovadyahu we're not going to do because we're finished with him, but I want to remind you of this page here that speaks of Ovadyahu. Look at the top line. Hayo yarei es Hashem me'od. He was very fearful of God. See, hayo yarei es Hashem me'od. See it? So this Drasha Sachachamim cites a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Tes. You see right under Rashi? Right. It says, "Omar Rabbi Abba, Gadol Shneimar ba Ovadiahu Yosemi Mash Neimar ba Avram Avinu." Deilu ba'avram ksiv yirei Elokim ata v'lo ksiv ma'od uva'avadyahu ksiv ma'od yirei Elokim ma'od. Right? Remember what we said about this about a month ago? Let's read it. It's down here. You see the Dalet? V'nei me'amar ha'zeh ha'mamar ha'zeh l'chora nira ki ovadyahu haya gadol min b'madregato b'yirat shamayim me'avram avinu. But the work is that Koshela Eomer, should you be Israel and Hashim Shiyu Gedolim Yoser Me Ha'avos Shalanu? How can you say this of Adyahu, a relative nobody, on the assumption of many Mefarshim that this is not the Ovadia in Treyasar? This is a different person who lived 200 years before, right? Mm-hmm. And to say that this relative nobody is a greater Mida than Avram Avinu.
It's different authors, so how can you compare the two?
It's very small.
The Torah is not saying it.
Okay, so you'd want to say that when if the Torah calls someone Yirei Elokim, so the author of this book is the author of Malachim Yirmiyahu. All right, he's exaggerating. Okay, all right, but that's certainly not the way. It's not the way Chazal worked.
Right, he would have called Avram also more so.
It's not the way Chazal worked, but okay. So look what the answer he gives. Do you remember? I think I mentioned this earlier. Mm-hmm. He says, "V'hanira lomar bezel if imat isa berambam perak aleph medeo selacha dalid haderach hayishara hu mida beinonis shebechol dea v'dea mikol adeo sheish lo adam." Whatever personality trait you have, it should be the golden road, mean the middle of the road, kava yashar. Don't be extreme in whatever it is that you're doing. Even yiras Hashem. Imagine such a thing. So he wants to say that. That does could just continue reading a little bit.
But Moshe didn't have an extreme.
We're not talking about Moshe right now. We're talking about Avram and Avadyahu. One second. Mm-hmm. So he says, "So shabachol dea v'dea mikol adeo sheilo l'adam v'hi hadeo shehi rechoka mishtei ktzavos richuk shove ve'ena krova lo lazu v'lo lazu." Do not go to the extreme in any characteristic, even a good characteristic like Yiras Hashem. Rak misha notel letzad echad min hara tzerichu lintos letzad sheni b'chadeisha b'meshach hazman yamod b'mida haemtzis. That if you see that your particular characteristic goes to one side, whatever it is, your desire for liquor, your desire for arayos, your desire for gambling, whatever it is, you personally have to go specifically to the other side. You see you have a weakness, then balance that weakness to the other side. Okay? So he's trying to say that if Ovadyahu was Yireas Elokim Ma'od, it's because he was weak. B'yineim kein efshar shemishu yirei shamayim b'mida kitzonis lo tovu. It's not good to be Yirei Elokim Ma'od. What an amazing, amazing chap. Right? It's not good to be so, to have such profound Yireas Shamayim. Because that person, the Chora had to go to the other extreme. So do you see what I'm getting at here? Look at your Eliyahu students. Who went to the other extreme other than Eliyahu? That would be Yonah, another student of Eliyahu. He was so fearful of walking in the footsteps of his Rebbe that he went totally to the other side. Where Eliyahu is, remember that the Lashon the Gemara used, is Tovea La'av. He was so in some of the Ovadyahu is a good student of Eliyahu. Because Eliyahu is also given to extremes. Hmm. Right? Remember, I explained last week, that if he is indeed Pinchas throughout the ages, he controlled that midah of Kana'us. What in the Torah, what gift in the Torah moved him away from such zealous behavior? Shalom. I'm giving him a covenant of peace, meaning of tranquility, because the zealot is not tranquil. The zealot is losing his marbles all the time. He's losing his right. He's always on. He gets. Now Moshe had a zealous strain in him as well. If you don't take him off in anger, he can really hit a rock or kill an Egyptian or break a luchos or something of that order. But he was very much in control most of the time, right? And then when he hit the rock, which is his undoing, you can forgive him. His sister just passed away, and still they don't give him a break. All right, but see, look what's happening to his students. Ovadyahu follows in the Rebbe's footsteps. Yireh Elokim Ma'od. Yonah went the other extreme. What was he? He's Toveya Leben.
He's running away.
Toveya Leben. He runs away from God's will because he thinks that that will is harmful to his people. He went to the other extreme. Now, we're going to learn about Micha. Okay, and along the way, I want to read a lot of these midrashim that I underlined over time, and we'll see that all the midrashim about these four students are really moving in the same direction. But I'd like to cover some ground today. All right, so let's learn a little about Micha, and we'll see that Elisha. Why does Elisha get to follow in the Rebbe's footsteps? Because he took the two extremes of Yonah and Ovadyahu, and he managed to keep them. Now, when we say that someone is, do you remember the Medrash itself that says that Yonah is one extreme, Eliyahu is the other extreme, and who's in the middle? So now I'm saying Elisha, but that's not what the Medrash says. Yirmiyahu is in the middle. Yirmiyahu is Toveya La'av Ulaben. He's always pressing the case of both, Yirmiyahu. Remember the pasuk it quotes? Nachnu pashanu umarinu. We have sinned, that's Toveya La'av. In other words, Tzadok Adin. We deserve what we got. But for goodness sakes, God, how does the pasuk end? Ata lo salachta. Nachnu pashanu umarinu, ata lo salachta. We did some bad things, God. I'll take it on the chin. But enough already. Forgive us. Let's go. Let's get on with it. That's there. He's taking the case of the child, right? What's the Navi's job? To press Bnei Yisrael's case before God, and to press God's case before Bnei Yisrael. Right? Yonah does too much of one. Eliyahu does too much of the other, and Yirmiyahu is right down the middle. And we'll see that. And Elisha is also both.
To me, he's always defending the nation.
Too much defending the people. He's certainly defending God before the people. I would say the following is that also be very careful that Toveya La'av and Toveya La'ben does not mean that they are blind robots who are always standing right in the middle of everything. There are some times where Yirmiyahu himself goes to an extreme of Toveya La'av and an extreme of Toveya Leben. What it means is, I hope you understand what these words mean. Toveya means pressing the case of the Father, meaning God, or pressing the case of the Son, meaning Israel. What it means is that when the Medrash says that Yahweh was a combination, it means if you would balance all of his prophecies and put them in a scale, you'll see that they balance out. But not that every single prophecy of Yahweh was somewhere down the middle. You know what I'm saying? That's just wrong. Sometimes there are some. Look at chapter 12, and you'll see a shocking Toveya La'av in Yirmiyahu. Right? Is it that's Madua Derech Hashem Tzalecha Sholu Kol Bog Debogin? So in that prophecy, it's Toveya La'av, not Toveya La'ben. So I once heard Norman Lamb, the great defender of centrism, say that a centrist is not necessarily someone who has every opinion down the center. If you stay in the center of the road, you're going to get hit by a car at some point. Centrism means that if you have from among your 4,200 opinions of things, if you put them all in the balance, some of them will be extreme, but they'll balance basically. They'll balance out. You have to be extreme about some things, right? Don't just be right in the center. You're not a robot and everything, right? Okay, so that's just a mussar about this point. So it's what's fascinating is that if Eliyahu had these four students, right, Yonah, Micha, Ovadyahu, and Elisha, it's clear to the biblical reader that one of them is going to actually take over and even be, by his own request, twice as great. And we'll see why the other three sort of fell out. Okay. Elisha will turn out to be one of the most beloved prophets of our history. Okay, so let's read. Remember last week, Eliyahu was bidden to appoint a new king for Aram. Right, he was bidden to appoint a new prophet and to start packing his bags because he's going on vacation. Okay. All right, so now let's. I want to learn about Micha. We know all about Ovadyahu. We know all about Yonah.
We certainly know something about Elisha, although we haven't learned about him. We probably have some idea about him. But most people around this table can't say anything about Micha. Who is Micha? What was he? What did he do?
You don't know anything.
Well, now we're going to. Okay. All right, we're page 860 is where we left off, so we're going to turn to 862. Just we were reading the Hebrew, so it goes every two pages. Okay. Okay, so Eliyahu was told to appoint his replacement. Appointing a replacement is not necessarily a sad thing. It's a lovely thing. It means you know that your work is going to carry on. Right? When Aaron was taken up to a mountain, by his brother and his brother's son, and he does something that appears to be very sad. He tells Aaron, "Okay, Aaron, pick up your hands," and Moshe starts stripping him of his Kohen Gadol garments, and he puts them on his son. And then Aaron lies down and dies. And you say, what a sad thing to do. It's not a sad, it's a wonderful thing to do. Gemara says that Moshe wanted so badly to die in a similar way. Right? Kasher meis Aharon, mus bahar kasher meis Aharon. He goes, halavai she amus kasher meis Aharon. That I can go up to a mountain with one of my sons and give him my garments or something, or my staff. Whatever would be the transference of his mission. So this is what Eliyahu does. He's about to transfer to Elisha. And let's read Pasuk Tes. Vayelech misham vayimtza es Elisha ben Shafat v'hu choresh shnei masar tzmadim. This guy is real clever. He is plowing with 12 pairs of cows. Can you imagine leading 24 cows? He was with the 12th. Why do you have to tell me how many cows he's plowing with? Some commentaries say 12 pairs, some say 12 altogether. It doesn't matter. It means that he's clever and he's a worker. He's a schwitzer, right? When Elisha was chosen, he was not in the middle of farenfering a Ramban and a Milchamos and a Taisvus and a Ravid. He was plowing a field. Okay. Vayazov es habakar. I'm sorry, it says, Vayavor Eliyahu elav, vayashlech adarto elav. And now, did people have pictures? They didn't have Rebbe cards at the time. But Elisha was already apparently suffused with some knowledge of what Eliyahu would look like. And Eliyahu threw a cloak. A cloak is the symbol of Malchus, or some kind of leadership. Right? And he dropped the yoke, and he ran after Eliyahu. He understood what was going on. I know what you're here for. I guess, you know, Elisha, God doesn't just tell Eliyahu, go to a guy who has to start going to Navi school. Right? Elisha is up. He knows what to expect. If Eliyahu comes to your house, there's going to be a good reason. He's not just coming to get food from me. Eliyahu gets food from widows, not from men with 12 cows. So he says, let me go at least kiss my mother and my father and my mother goodbye. Ve'elcha acharecha, and then I'll follow you. Nice. Vayomer lo leich shuvi, kimeo sisi lach. Go, please. I haven't done anything yet with you. I mean, you don't know me anything yet. Right? You're not my shamus yet. Okay. Now, Elisha is about to become an intern. He's going to be a squire. He's going to be he's going to sit by Eliyahu and watch how you do navi work. Ve'yoshev mecharav ve'yikach es tzemen habakor ve'yizbachehu uvichli habakor bishlom habasor v'yitein la'am ve'yochelu ve'yokam ve'yilech achari Eliyahu ve'yisher sehu. You already get a picture of what an amazing navi Elisha is going to be. Now, there is one very cryptic story in the middle of it all about 42 children and a forest and two bears. I'm not going to discuss it now, but we get up to it. It may just stump us, but we'll try to make some logic out of it. But other than that story, this first initial glimpse of Elisha, where he takes the plow, he takes and he makes a mizbeach and he makes a fire. Obviously, this is v'izbacheu. It doesn't look like he's making a korban here, right? V'izbacheu means he made a zevach. No, no, he made a sacrifice. He didn't make a sacrifice. He just slaughtered it in order to feed people. Okay.
That's got to be very expensive.
What he said, this is how the Mefarshim explain it, that if Eliyahu came now to appoint me as a Navi, this whole area here is hektish. It's all holy. So what can I do with it? I can either dedicate it to the temple. All right, but remember, these guys are in the north now. It's not so easy to do such a thing from there. Or I can slaughter it and feed all these poor people around here, these starving people. This is a time of great famine now. Throughout Eliyahu and even Elisha's time, it's a terrible famine because the kings of the north are vicious, they're terrible. Right? It's Elachav, his sons, right? So he's, let me use this to feed people. Okay. Okay. All right, so.
Could it be that, he was just appointed? Maybe he made a feast, for the.
Could be that he's making a. But it doesn't matter what the reason for slaughtering the animals. It just he did use it to feed the people.
Shmuel, when he told Shaul that he is going to be the king, there was also some kind of a zevah.
Right. So that was. But remember, that was before. The base of Mikdash was built, and after Shiloh was destroyed. So there, you can bring Zvachim any place you want.
Yeah,
at this time, now that the temple stands, you can't just bring Kavanos. I know Eliyahu just did that, right? But that was part of a profound Horas Shah, and he says, God, you told me to do this. So I did as you said. Okay, so that's the first job. He appoints Elisha. Now he has to appoint the next king of Aram, and let's see what happens here. Uven Hadad Melech Aram Kavatzes Kol Chelau Shloshim B'Shnayim Melechito V'Sus V'Rechev. 32 kings. Why not 30? Just say 30. You see, there was a time in our history where we conquered 31 kings. Remember what that is?
31.
Where's the relationship? Yoshua. In Sefer Yoshua, it says the conquest of the land of Canaan. Conquered 31 kings. So here it's saying this as if though this is going to be a more daunting task. There are 32 kings that joined with Aram to once and for all make a finish off the northern kingdom. Now you know your history. Aram didn't do it. Ashur did. And Aram fell 10 years before the northern kingdom. But right now Aram is the bigger enemy. Sus v'rechev, and they took many horses and many chariots. Vayal v'yotzer al Shomron v'yilachem bo. They encamped around Shomron and started to fight it and squeezed it out. Vayishlach malachim el achav melech Yisrael ha'ira. V'yemer lo ko amar ben hadad, kas becho uzav cho lihu. And they sent a message to Achav saying, your silver and your gold are mine. V'noshechu v'necha atovim lihem. And your women and your children, the best ones, are mine. Trash talk, right? As you say. Now, what's this strategy? Buying time. Come in and take my children if you want. What does that mean? My wives, my money. Yes, O King of Aram. I agree with you. Whatever I have is yours. That's what he told the messengers. Right? Most Mefarshim say that he was being facetious. He didn't answer the trash talk. He said, yes, it's yours. Okay, V'yeshuvu malachim v'yemru ko amar ben hadad lemor, ki sholachti alecha lemor kas b'choza v'cho nushecho v'necha lisitein. And they sent messengers to go and take some of that. Ki im ka'is machor eshlachas avadai alecha v'chipsu es beischa v'espatei avadecha. And I'm going to search your house Whatever they want, they're going to take. Let's talk this out. Look at this evil that's happening to us. I don't know what I was thinking. He told me that to come take my women, my children, my gold, my silver, and my gold. And I didn't stop him. I didn't talk back to him. I didn't tell him he can't do it. Don't listen to him. He thinks that you're okay with it, but you're not. Right? Remember, this is Achav who can't make a decision on what kind of eggs to have in the morning. It's like a Achashverosh. Now, did you notice that from the first time that the Arameans told him, whatever yours is mine, what did they say? Your silver, your gold, your women, your children. The next time they added one word. Are you familiar with the Gemara on this? They added one word. They said, Kol Machmad Einecha. Have you ever remember what Rashi says on this? Kol Machmad Einecha. They wanted the Torah. They said, we heard you have a law code, and we want it. We want to take the Torah from you. The Torah. So it's interesting. I mean, this is obviously, I have to read a little in depth into what the Gemara is saying here. And Achav said, no, you can't have that. I'm not going to give you my Torah. What is Achav doing protecting a Torah he's not keeping? So Mefarshim to the Gemara say it was the original Torah. Remember, from Moshe Rabbeinu has not been so many years, much less time than since from Rashi to today, from the Rambam to. We have the Rambam's handwriting. We have the Rambam's written Mishnah Torah. So they had the written Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu.
I don't know.
Maybe a Torah from that time.
What year is this?
This is about 600 years from the time we entered the land of Israel. Maybe 650. All right. So anyway, the Machmad Einecha, the Gemara says, has to do with Torah. So here is how they present it. And again, when a drash seems to be very like flighty, you have to read into it. You have to see a deeper message here. Achav is not observing Torah, but he understands at least, his wife probably doesn't, but he understands at least that the Torah is still ours. Right? There are some people who don't bother to keep Torah, but they have a sense that it's important that there are some Jews keeping Torah. Whatever my family dynamic is, because of my wife that I'm obsessed with and whatever else, that's my problem. But I'm not going to bereave the people of Israel of their Torah. Right, that's how Chazal place it. All right. So lo tove, not interested now. So of course, this is going to be fighting words for the Arameans. Yesterday you said we could take whatever we want, and now you're going back on your word. V'yom le'malachei ben Adad imru la'aduni ha'melach kol asher shalachta levadecha b'rishona e'ese v'adavar hazeh lo uchal lasos. So you see, this is why the Gemara says this. He says the first thing you asked for, that I can give you, but I can't give you machmar einecha. You can't have that. Right? And they went back to the king of Aram. Remember, Eliyahu is charged with appointing a new king. This king is going to die soon. He's obviously not talking about the God of Israel. Remember, we already learned already in this book that in Sefer Melachim, this is a Lashon Shvua. Right? These words, Ko Yaseh Elokim V'Cho Yosifu, only appear in three books in Sefer Lachem, this Lashon is a Shavua. Ko Yasun Li Elokim V'Cho Yosifu. Notice, he says Ko Yosifu, because he believes in many gods. When Rus says it, she says Ko Yaseh Li Hashem V'Cho Yosif Ki Hamavas Yafrid B'Ni V'Nech. Right? So this is just Lashon Shavua. It only appears in Sefer Shoftim, Shmuel, Melachim, and Rus. Never appears in any other book. But it's a lotion of an oath. Im yispoke afar shomron l'sholim l'chol ha'am asher v'ragloi. This guy is a real trash talker. He says the foxes are going to trample over the over the heads of the people of Shomron. In other words, I'm going to turn this place to utter desolation. Leon Melech Yisrael v'yemer Dabru al Yisalel Choger b'kim Fateach. So he says. He says that this is an interesting saying. And he says he's responding to him. It says, "Don't be so quick to shoot off your mouth, right? Al Yisalel Choger k'mifateach. The one who girds the sword, right, should not be talk the same way as the one who takes it off. All right. So, in other words, don't be so fast to think that you are capable of defeating me. Right. When Ben-Hadad heard this, he was getting drunk with all his men in their tents, because they pitched tent all around Shomron to squeeze them out and not let anything in or out. And he said to all of his servants, set up the army. Let's go. We're going to set up the army to fight. And the Navi came to Achav. You know who this Navi is? It's Micha. Okay. So the Navi tells Achav, these men are in your hands. You're going to conquer them. You're going to defeat them. They are Achav b'mi. How? They're much greater than I am. They are Koma Hashem. B'narei sarei hamdinos. They are Mi'ya sarei melchama. They are Ata. He said, the young ones from all your cities, they're going 864. We have a Mi'ya sarei melchama. They are Ata. Who's going to go to battle? Look at the top of the page, 864. And he says, you're going to lead the battle. But if Kodis Narei Sarem Dinos for you, Masayim Shnayim Mushloshim, 232. Vachoyim Pokadis Kola Om Kol B'nei Yisrael Shivas Alofim. And then he took 7,000. You remember the number 7,000 in the story? Lo Karu Labal. That's the number that Eliyahu said did not bow down to Baal so far. That's these people. Vayitzu B'tzarayim Ben Hadad Shoseh Shikor Basukos. Of course, in the afternoon, what else is the king of Aram doing? He's getting drunk. Getting drunk is a very bad thing to be doing for a king in Tanakh. They usually killed right after getting drunk. You know what else is a very bad thing for kings to do? Sleeping during the day. Whoever sleeps during the day gets assassinated right away, gets killed. And one person who doesn't get killed right away is David, who it says he got up from his nap in the evening. And that's when he saw Bathsheba. So, king shouldn't be, I don't know, maybe he's busy all night. The David was sleeping, was up all night, St. Taylor, maybe, I don't know. But,
David came to Shaul was sleeping.
Also, yes, sleeping, yes. Right. Okay, so, Hu v'malachim shloshim u'shnayim melech ozer oso. 32 kings, 33 altogether if you count him, were all drunk skunks. And the words came out that Achav is preparing for battle. Look at the trash talk continues. He says, if he's coming to fight me, grab him alive. And if he's coming to make peace with me, alive grab him. In other words, he's talking Yoda, and then he's talking. He's talking for, I don't know. He's just tifsum chayim tifsum. He's just being. In other words, no matter how you look at it, grab him alive so I can torture him. And they sent all the young ones to fight. And somehow, as the prophet told Achav, they were able to chase the Arameans. And the king of Israel himself, Achav, made a great beating upon Aram. Vaygash ha-Nabi al-Melech Yisrael v'yemer lo le'echis chazak p'da'a u're'eyes asher ta'aseh ki d'shuvas ha-shona melech aram ole alecha. Go back and strengthen yourself. He's chazak. Make yourself internally strong because you can be sure that the king of Aram who escaped is going to regroup and come back to fight again. Okay? So, it says that they continue to fight. In the next battle, Israel wiped out Aram even to a much greater extent. 100,000 soldiers were involved in the fight, and Israel defeated them. Okay? I'm turning now to, if you would, with me. I know it's a little confusing how to maneuver these pages, page 866. Yeah, that's why Chazal say this. That's why such a rush was able to be so successful. They wiped out the Aramean army, and the king of Aram is hiding. It says he goes from cheder to cheder. He's hiding from one place, like Saddam Hussein. Remember, he was hiding down in the basements and from this place to that place because he knew that they're after him. Okay. So v'emru elav avadav, his servant said, "Hinei shamanu." We heard that you can beg for peace, beg for chesed from Jewish kings. They told, you know, like Shaul did, page 866 at the top. Like Shaul did, remember when Shaul took the king of Amalek alive, and then Shmuel walked in. Remember what the king of Amalek said? It's Haftorah, right before Purim. Did he say, Ochein sar mar hamavis? The bitterness of death has surely passed if the prophet of Israel is here. Shmuel talked some trash to him. Said, the way you made many mothers to be childless, I'm about to make your mother childless. And he sliced him up. He uses a hapax legomena, vayishaseif. Remember the word vayishaseif is agog. The word that never appears again. Anyway, so the word out there is it's okay to be attacked and to be captured by the kings of Israel. They're lenient, right? What you didn't want to get captured is by the king of the Philistines. They ripped you apart limb by limb in their arenas, and they did it over a period of months. Remember what they did to Shimshon? Remember what they did to Shaul? That's why Shaul wanted to kill himself rather than be captured by the Plishtim. Right? He didn't want to be captured alive. What they did to him after getting him dead was despicable. Be it as it may, it says that he said, "Let's nosima nosakim b'masneinu v'chavolim b'roshenu v'netzei o'melech Yisrael ulai yichayes nafshecha." He says, "Let's go out to the king of Israel. They're merciful. Hey, they're the Bali Chesed. Go out and give yourself up, and they'll let you return home." So Ben Hadad comes out. Remember, this is the same Ben Hadad who recently had told him, "Your money is my money, your women are my money." And now he's coming out begging the same man for mercy. My, how things have changed. And Achav comes out, he says, "Avdenu Chai, you're still alive? He's my brother." Right? And they took him together. You know, there's a certain camaraderie that kings have amongst each other, right? Even though they're enemies, he takes them on his chariot, and they say, "Let's schmooze a little." And he said, "The cities my father took from your father, I'll return. Just let me live. A king will do anything. Give a king's ransom just so he could live." Right? And you can even have places right outside of Damascus. I'll give you. Okay, like my father pitched tent near Shomron, I'll let you pitch tent right near Damascus. And I'll forge a pact with you. Just let me send me back to Aram alive. And he did. The reputation stood. The king let him live, and he sent him back home. Hakeni na, v'yemayin eish lakosav. I must tell you what we're about to read is very cryptic and hard to understand. A prophet went over to a man and said, quickly, punch me in the face. And he didn't say, why? He says, punch me. I have to look like I just got into a fight. Punch me. Give me a black eye. Do something. Punch me. And he refuses. I'm not going to hit a holy man. Because you refuse to hit me, you're going to leave my presence and meet a lion instead. He left and a lion came and ate him up. Now, we'll see shortly why this what this story represents, because it says, look, he saw another man, right? And he said, hit me. Is everything okay, Moshe? Okay. Okay, so he said to the other one, he says, "V'im so ish v'emer acher v'emer hakeni na." He said, "Hit me now." V'akehu ish hakehu fatzoa, and the second man did hit him. He hit him and he caused damage. Right. V'elach hanavi v'yamod l'melach al haderech. So the prophet wanted to appear before the king, looking like he just got into a fight. V'yitchapes ba'efer alinav, and he took dirt and ash or dust, and he put it all over his face. V'yem melech over v'hut sa'akel ha'melech v'yomer avdecha yotza bekerav ha'melchama v'hinei ish sor v'yavei elai ish v'yemer shmor sa'ish hazeim v'pokeid y'pokeid v'yiso nafshecho tachas nafsho o kikar kesef tishkol. I just came from a battle against Aram, and look how I look. I'm all beaten, right?
Soda?
Drink. It's alright, it's okay. Alright, so he came up and he was looking like this, all beaten up, right? Alright, and he started screaming at the king, and he says, Avdecha yatza b'kerav ha'milchama. Your servant was just in the battlefield. V'hinei ish sar, right? He said, a man turned aside. And they took to me to man and said, guard this man. Don't let him be missing. If he escapes, then your life will be taken for his. All you have to pay a large sum to make up for this man who's gone. This whole thing is a metaphor for the prophet showing anger that the king let the king of Aram free. For all that he just threatened you. You want to be a nice guy, but he's going to strengthen himself for another day. Right? This could be even a metaphor for our own day about what Israel has to keep doing.
It's a lesson for us.
Anyway, but this is what he's saying. We don't have prophets today, so we can't know with this degree of certainty what's going on. Okay, so he says, "Vayav decha osei heino v'heino v'hu einenu." V'emarei lov melech Yisrael kein mishpatecha atacha ratzta. The king understood what he was saying. The king knew that he meant because you let the king of Aram free, you were going to have a bitter end as a result. And shortly afterwards, I'll let the cat out of the bag. The king of Aram did kill Achav shortly. Right? What a turn of events! Right. So what I want to do is. Already today, tell you what Micha did. What happened is that Aram did prepare himself for a better day, and Aram did strengthen himself once again, and fought a battle with Achav. There's a story that intercedes, Perek Chaf Aleph, we're going to do next week, but I want to tell you now what happened then. Achav saw the great threat, and remember, he is related to another king by marriage, the king of Yehuda. He gets the king of Yehuda to help him. It's actually a fairly good story because during this time Yehuda and Yisrael were often fighting each other. But here they joined together against a common enemy. Aram was not so much of an enemy of Yehuda, but they certainly were an enemy of Yisrael. They were right on top of them. Right? So Yehoshaphat came to fight with Ahav, his mechutin. And in this battle, Ahav calls out and says, "Who can bring us a navi, who will tell us what's going to happen in this battle?" So a lot of prophets came to tell Ahav, "Ahav, you're such a strong king, you're such a successful king. You just defeated Aram so roundly. You're going to defeat him again." And every prophet was kissing up that way, right? So then Ahav said, "Is there any other prophets around?" And Yehoshaphat says, "Yes, there's a man named Micha." Ahav says, "Ah, I don't like Micha. He never has good things to say about me." which I guess is a good thing. We'll read about this, probably not next week, maybe even the week after. But so Micha, and here is another very cryptic story, because God calls upon various spirits up in the Shemayim, and asks, and the spirits are all sitting to God's right, and it's a very anthropomorphic, this story, because it seems that God has a place, and he's surrounded by people, by spirits, and he appoints a lying spirit, a spirit of a lie, as I'll say, it's the neshama of Navot, who he had just killed. He got a lying spirit to convince Ahav that the battle you're about to fight will be successful. That lying spirit was put into all the mouths of those false prophets who said, "Yes, it's going to be a good battle." And Micha went to Ahav to say, "Ahav, those are liars. I'm here to tell you what will happen. Nothing good." And he goes, "I told you, he always has bad things to say about me." Right? So he says, "All right, I'm just trying to help you here." All right? Of course, Ahav didn't listen. He goes to battle, and the king of Aram, who remember, this king was saved by Ahav. Ahav let him go home.
Doesn't matter, right?
And he says, "Don't fight anybody. Don't even kill anybody. I want Ahav. That's all I want." Sort of like, you know, Avshalom's battle. He says, "Just get me David. That's I don't want to kill a lot of people and then have to rule over them. And they're dead. Their brothers who and nephews whose uncles and brothers were killed and things like that, right?" So he says, "Just kill. I just want Ahav." At one point of the battle, it says they came up to a man who was disguised as Ahav, and they looked at him closely and said, "No, that's not Ahav. Let him live." And then they came up to the king of Yehuda, and they said, "Well, that's the king." And he goes, "No, that's the king of Yehuda. We don't care about him. We're looking for Ahav." And they caught him. They got him. They shot. They found him.
Humiliated by Ahav.
And they found him. And they killed him. An arrow found him.
Was it typical, or was it just unique to this time that there were so many prophets, real prophets, running around? Because it seems like that would be very confusing to know who to follow.
Yeah. So it says that Ovadyahu had a school for 100 prophets,
and a lot of them were killed.
Right, so there are different kinds of prophets. It says, "Vayi ish echad min haramatayim tzofim." Mal Merashi Shama. Elkanah had 200, taught 200 prophets. Matayim tzofim. Matayim tzofim. Right. But there's a difference between a prophet and a messenger. A prophet who's a messenger of God is someone with a mission. Now, Mitnabim is also people who not false prophets, but Mitnabim in the times of Shaul.
It seems like there are at least four major prophets around right now.
Yeah, in Hanami. Now, what would you teach in a school for prophets? Meditation.
Harry Potter wizards.
Obviously, show up and say, "Teach me prophecy."
And yes, and also the teacher would be able to know shortly, after a short while, who gets a scholarship, right? Who gets a scholarship? We've seen sometimes, you have a hypnotist who puts 10 people on the front and goes, "No, you're not good. Get out of here." So somebody can really relax and get himself down. So, which I feel like doing right now anyway, I will. So that's what they had in this school. Maybe some of you could read some of Rambam Hilchos Yisrael Torah. You could read some of Rambam Hilchos and I'm sorry, the Mar Nevuchim. You know, there are certain works that are out there that tell us what are prophetic images. Yirmiyahu has chapter 23 is all about the nature of prophecy. There are good places in Tanakh. As far as this, Micha is this spirit, accepts this, he becomes this spirit of a lie, but he tries to convince the king that these guys are liars and you should not listen to them. But alas, the king doesn't think any too much of Micha. All right, so we got a little glimpse of the four students. Yona, we know about. We're going to learn his whole sefer towards the end. We have a glimpse of Avadyahu, Micha, and we will not get a picture of Elisha until Eliyahu is ready to die. All right, and he's going really fascinating Navi. But next week we're going to do a story in the middle. And this, if you recall last year, when we were learning Shmuel Bet, I noticed the amazing point of Chazal, who fly through hoops to absolve every bit of whatever David did with Bathsheba. They find this rendition, this explanation, and they're so careful to forgive David and absolve him of anything with Bathsheba. But at the end, it's coincidentally the Daf Yomi from just a few days ago, if any of you are following the Daf,
yeah,
where it says, but David did sin in what? Kabbalat Lashon Hara. And he accepted the slander about Mephibosheth from Tziva.
Right.
And that the Gemara says, no, I'm not working on Lashon Hara. There's no absolution from Lashon Hara. Right? What on paper looked like murder and adultery. And I mean, the prophet tells him, you killed him with the sword of Ammon. And we even learned Shlucho Shaladim Kemosa from that. David didn't kill him. The Ammonites killed him. Yeah, but you sent him to die. You know, ain't Shliach L'Dvar Aveira even. But all right, but still, the Gemara learns this from David. So, especially when it's a king who sends it. So this is a morality play that the rabbis, you know, adultery, murder, we can work, not Lashon Hara. Don't give me Lashon Hara. Not forgiving Lashon Hara. Right? And here, what's happening with Achav, that with all of Achav's excesses, Avodah Zarah up the... Gilui Arayos, you should see the way the Gemara talks about his... You can picture a wife of a Tzidonite, a princess, so Gilui Arayos was rampant. Right? And Shvichus Damim was misery. Right? There was so much murder going on. But what takes down his kingdom? The vineyard. Right? Kerem Navot. Right? Tune in next week about the vineyard that takes down Achav's kingdom. And Hashem will continue with that next week.